Welcome back to the Rav Hirsch on Parsha Shir. This week we will be studying Rav Hirsch's commentary on Parsha Tzav. And we begin at the beginning of the Parsha, which opens with the mitzvah of Trumas Hadashan. The Pasuk says in Perek Vav, Pasuk Gimel, says V'lavash haKohen midovad, the Kohen should put on his linen clothing. U'michnasei vad yobash al b'soro, he should put linen pants on his flesh. V'herimis hadashen asher tochal ho'esh es ha'ola ha'omizbeach, he should lift the ash which the fire has burned on the fire has burned of the ola on the mizbeach. V'samo etzal mizbeach, he should place it next to the mizbeach. The mitzvah is that at the very beginning of the day, in the wee hours of the morning, the first thing the Kohen would do would be, the selected Kohen would go up to the Mizbeach with a shovel and take a shovel full of ashes off the Mizbeach from the ashes that resulted from the burning of the previous day's Korbanos, remove that ash and place it at the side of the Mizbeach. And Rav Hirsch, in his commentary here, investigates this mitzvah and seeks to understand what its meaning is. And he explains that this act of Trumas Hadashen is not the beginning of the day's avoda, but really serves as a conclusion of the avoda of the prior day. And he shows how just as the kometz is taken from the mincha, and it's called an azkara, it's called a reminder of the entire mincha, it serves as a memory of it on the mizbeach, so to the Trumas Hadashen, the small amount of ashes that are taken off the mizbeach serve as a memory of the of where it comes from, of the previous day's karbanos. And so the ashes that are removed serve as a reminder of the accomplishments of the previous day, the karbanos that were brought, the growth that and inspiration that occurred as a result of those karbanos. And we connect that inspiration from the previous day to the beginning of the new day. And what that shows is that future accomplishments are really built on those of the past. And Rav Hirsch says that the Trumas Hadashen reminds us the new day does not bring any new tasks. It's not a new avodah. The avodah today is the same as the avodah of yesterday. We connect the two to show that there's really a continuity between yesterday and today. It's the same avodah we're going to do again today. Rav Hirsch writes that, I'll quote you from his commentary, he writes, the ashes remind the nation at the transition to the avodah of the day that is about to begin, that the new day does not bring any new tasks, for the task that is incumbent upon us today is the same task that was incumbent upon us yesterday. The most recent Jewish grandchild stands in the place where his first ancestors already stood, and each new day adds its contributions to the fulfillment of the one task assigned to all generations of the house of Israel. Each day receives its mission from the hand of the previous day. And so we connect the two days, the previous day's avodah, to the new day's avodah, to show that they really are one and the same, and they continue. And we seek to build on the inspiration of, in the case of that, of the avodah and the mikdash, we build on the inspiration of the previous day's avodah and climb to ever higher heights on this new day. But it's also a lesson for us about Jewish history, that we today seek to build off of the growth of our parents and our grandparents, and they all lived the same life as we do, the same avoda that we have, and they follow the same Torah, and we seek to build off of their accomplishments and grow even higher and become even closer to Hashem. But we have to recognize that we owe a great debt to the accomplishments of the past, and we can only be where we are today, and we can only go to where we will be going in the future because of the shoulders that we stand on, because of the accomplishments that have been done before us, and that have served as a foundation for the growth that we can now accomplish. This is the meaning of the Truma Sadeshan as it applies to the focus in the Mikdash, and as it applies to the lesson that we can think about for our own lives. And Rav Hirsch continues and explains that this is why there is a unique din regarding the ashes removed from the Mizbeach. Typically speaking, when we talk about the Isur Mi'ila, which is the prohibition against deriving personal benefit from items of Hekdesh, typically speaking, Mi'ila no longer applies to an object that is called Na'aseh Mitzvaso, where it's the mitzvah has already been done and completed. If the mitzvah is completed with this object, then the object is no longer subject to the prohibition of Mi'ila because it doesn't have the Kedusha anymore. It's been used in the service of Hashem, and now it no longer has Kedusha. However, the Trumas Hadashan, the ashes that are placed on the side of the Mizbeach, although the mitzvah has been done with them, the Trumas Hadashan has been completed, these ashes retain their Kedusha and are still subject to the laws of Mi'ila. And Rav Hirsch explains that this is because the ashes are placed at the side of the Mizbeach to serve as a reminder of the past. And specifically in this situation, even though the mitzvah is completed, we still want that memory there. We want that Kedusha to endure and to sustain us in the coming day. And so the Mi'ila prohibition remains attached to these ashes even after the mitzvah has been completed, even after the Trumas Hadeshan has been done. The Trumas Hadeshan was followed by a second step in the removal of the ashes, and that was called Hotzaas Hadeshan. And Hotzaas Hadeshan means that all the remaining ashes were removed from the top of the Mizbeach and taken outside the camp. We read about this in the following pasuk, pasuk Dalet. Ufashatas begodov v'lavash begodim acherim. The Kohen should remove his clothing and put on other clothing. V'hotzias other a different set of bigdei kahuna. V'hotzias hadeshan el michutz l'machane el makom tahor. And he should remove the ashes outside the camp to a pure place. And Rav Hirsch explains that there's still, despite the fact we want to retain the memory of the previous day's karbanos by keeping the ashes next to the Mizbeach through Trumas Hadeshan, we still wish to clear off the Mizbeach from the previous day's ashes, because we want to symbolize that despite the continuity of the Avodah, despite the transition from one day to the next, and that we don't want to forget about what happened on the previous day, we want to build on that, we still must bring a fresh approach, and we must still have that new, that spirit of newness, that feeling of excitement with the new day, realizing that today's a new day, it's a clean slate, we start from scratch, and we can accomplish great things. And also, Rav Hirsch writes, just not to rest on the laurels of previous accomplishments, not to glory in the old days and glory in how wonderful things once were and how great they were before, but nevertheless, we always strive to climb higher, and we don't sit back and revel in our previous successes. And so they would go ahead and remove all the ashes from the previous day's karbanos. We retain a small amount as a reminder, but then we clear the rest away. Rav Hirsch writes here in the Perush, the start of every new day summons us to set out upon our task with full and fresh devotion as though we had never accomplished anything before. The memory of yesterday's accomplishments must not inhibit today's performance. Thoughts of what has already been accomplished are likely to choke off all initiative for new accomplishments. Woe to him who is smug with satisfaction over his past achievements, who does not begin the work of each new day as though it were the very first day of his life's work. And Chazal expressed this, as we know, as B'chol yom yu b'necha k'chadoshos, that we want to view the Torah every day as if we have newly accepted it. And it is a brand new experience for us. The idea of the excitement that a bar mitzvah boy feels when he puts on tefillin for the first time, and how we should all feel that excitement every day when we're putting on tefillin. It's not something that comes naturally or easily. And that's why in the Mikdash, they actively went ahead and cleared off all the day's previous day's ashes, so that as if to start the day with a clean slate, a clean mizbeach, a new start. We're not going to think about what happened, how well we did yesterday, or even how poorly we did yesterday, but we're going to approach today for the day that it is, and allow ourselves to accomplish great things on this day. We still want to retain the memory of yesterday, but as our first rule, we don't want to let it inhibit our ability to perform well today. And Rav Hirsch writes that this is why Chazal explained on the pasuk that we just read, when it says to remove the clothing, poshat es begadav, levash begodim acherim, to put on different clothing. So Chazal explained that the different clothing that was worn was also bigdei kahuna, but they wore inferior bigdei kahuna. They wore worn out clothing, old clothing, for the purposes of hotzaas hadashim. And Rav Hirsch says this is done specifically this way because it reminds us of humility. The Kohanim, as they clean off the Mizbeach, are wearing humble clothing, worn-out clothing, as a reminder not to be proud of previous accomplishments, but to retain a sense of humility going forward and as we approach the new day and the task that awaits us on that day. So the combination of Trumas Hadashen and Hotzaas Hadashen symbolize how we relate to the previous days of Avodah, but also on a larger scale, how we relate to history, how we relate to those that came before us. We want to remember what they accomplished, because our current and future success is only because of successes of the past. But we don't want that to inhibit us from further growth. We want to build on it. And so we must still picture a clean slate for ourselves, and feel that we have the ability to go forward and chart our own path with every day that greets us going from this point on. I want to focus now on a set of psukim later on in the parsha, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Tes Vav. And here we see a few psukim that discuss the amount of time granted for the consumption of the carbon after the blood is put on the mizbeach. We read in Perek Zayin Pasuk Tes Vav, Uvsar Zevach Todas Shlamav, the meat of the carbon toda, B'yom Karbono Yeochel, it is eaten on the day of its offering. So when the carbon toda is brought during the day, the owner has that day and the following night to eat that carbon. L'ganiach menu aboker, he may not leave it over until morning. V'im neder onedavo, zevach carbono, if his carbon shlamim is brought voluntarily, so it's a regular carbon shlamim, not an obligatory carbon as a carbon toda is for one who experiences a salvation from Hashem. So if it's a regular carbon shlamim, v'yom hakrivo es zivcho yeochel, it may be eaten on the day that it is offered, umimocharos, and then also on the following day, v'hanosar mimenu yeochel, that which remains left over on day number two may still be eaten on the second day. V'hanosar mibesar hazovach b'yom hashlishi bo'eshi saref, but that which remains left over until the third day must be burnt. It is nosar, may not be eaten. And if, to translate the pasuk literally, if it is eaten on the third day, then it will not be accepted. The one who offers it, it will not be considered, it will not be credited to him. It will be pigul. That it's rejected. It's not. It's a pasul carbon. And the one who eats from it will bear his sin, which is a reference to a chiyuv kares. Now here, although the pasul begins with referring to eating it, if it is eaten on the third day, then it goes on to talk about how the carbon is not accepted. So Chazal explained that the eating here really refers to an intent to eat on the third day, at the moment of Shechita, or one of the other avodos done with the blood up until Zrika, putting the blood in the Mizbeach. So what this pasuk is telling us is that if during the time of the avoda of the karban itself, the shechita, the collection of the blood, the sprinkling of the blood in the Mizbeach, if at any point in that process the Kohen doing the avoda has an intent to eat the karban on the third day for a karban shlamim, beyond the permitted time frame for eating it, the karban is pasul. It's called pigul. It is not credited to the owner, such that if it's an obligatory karban for a shlamim, it wouldn't be obligatory. But if he made a vow to bring a shlamim, then he would have to bring another one. Then, and furthermore, one who eats from this karban, which is pigul, is chayiv karis. So here we see the Torah establishes the time frame for eating karbanos. Typically, it's a day and a night. For shlamim, it's 2 days and a night. The Torah establishes that no sar is to be burnt, karban meat that is left over beyond the permitted time frame. And the Torah establishes the concept of pigul, that if one has the intent to eat the karban on the third day beyond the permitted time frame during the offering of the karban, then that karban is pasul, and one who eats it is chayav karis. So Rav Hirsch investigates this concept of the time frame of eating karbanos. And he also adds that we find the isser of pigul and the prohibition of nosar applies equally to eating the meat of the karban as it does to sprinkling the blood in the mizbeach. The blood must be sprinkled in the mizbeach within the day. The intent and this is because the zrika, the putting the blood in the mizbeach, is also considered eating. It's the eating of the mizbeach. When you put the blood in the mizbeach, that is what the mizbeach receives from the karban, and then the meat that is eaten is what the owners receive from the karban. So it is important that these be within a certain time frame, Rav Hirsch writes, because we need to connect the shechita to the achila. We need to connect the slaughtering of the karban to the consumption of the karban. And to understand this, we need to understand the meaning behind the shechita and the achila. When a karban is shechted, Rav Hirsch writes, it's symbolic of the owner renouncing and giving up his physical desires and his indulgence in his physical needs. Take the animal and you slaughter it. So he's slaughtering his own personal his physical drive. But that alone is not enough. That's just the negative side of the karban, because it's a negation of part of himself. But then the karban, the blood is taken from the karban, the blood is put on the mizbeach, and certain fats are put on the mizbeach to burn on the fire. And then the owners, by shlam, or the kohanim, depending on the karban, will eat the meat of the karban. And what this does, this is the positive side of the karban. Because what this does is it takes those feelings, those character traits, those aspects of the human condition which were negated, and then the owner reacquires them, but on a higher level than he had them before. He regains what he gave up by uplifting it to Hashem and sanctifying it in the service of Hashem. So the shechita is the negation of those qualities, and by achila, by eating them, they are reassimilated back into the person. Just as the person eats the meat of the karban and assimilates it into his body, he regains those qualities that he gave up but does so on a higher plane. Now, Rav Hirsch points out that these two sides of the coin, these two aspects of the karban, the avoda of the karban, both the positive and the negative, are intertwined. They must go together. Because you can't just have zvicha or shechita without the achila, because what that because that just negates a certain part of who a person is, and that's just self-denial, and that's just it's just self-destruction. It's not uplifting part of the human existence to a higher level. It's just renouncing completely and saying that it has no part in the divine service. To have achila without tzvicha would be just self-indulgence. It's saying that my physical desires, I can do what I want with them, and I can let those control how I act. And Rav Hirsch says that that to have one without the other would be part of two lies of heathenism, as Rav Hirsch writes it. He says that to have shechita without achila, that's representative of the metaphysical falsehood of heathenism, because the heathens claim that we have to sacrifice from ourselves and renounce pleasures from ourselves, renounce enjoyment from ourselves, so that we can appease the gods. That's zvicha without achila. To have achila without zvicha, Rav Hirsch says, is the ethical lie of heathenism, which means that ethically they say, no, humans are created with desires, and that's wonderful, and you can indulge them, and those are that that's the highest to follow them is the highest level of existence. And that's the immorality of heathenism, which makes it almost sacred, which makes the physical drives even sacred. So that is why achila and zvicha must be connected, because when you connect achila and zvicha, what that does is negates the physical for the purpose of the spiritual, and we connect it to. And so now when we understand the purpose, the idea behind the shechita and the zrika and the echila, now we understand why they must be closely connected. And the Torah wants to ensure that the messages of the shechita and the echila are viewed in light of the other one. And to ensure that connection, the Torah requires for most karbanos that they be eaten on the same day that they are shechted. And that's exactly how it's phrased here in the pasuk, that it's biyom hakrivo zivcho yochel. The eating is connected to the day that the offering is brought, the day that the carbon is shechted. That's why there is this close connection. That's why the time frame for eating it is one day, just a day and a night, so that never more than 24 hours removed from one another. And that's why nosar, the prohibition of eating meat of a karban beyond that day, beyond the permitted time frame, is such a severe prohibition, which results in kares. Because to eat meat of a karban, which is nosar, is to say that one can indulge in achila without zvicha, and then one can have zvicha without achila, and the two don't need to be connected to one another. And so we instead prohibit eating nosar by penalty of kares, and such nosar is burned. It is burned, and because we can't allow it to exist, the reverse is even the existence of nosar is a threat to the kedusha and the whole idea of karbanos. So now that we understand this basic idea and the reason for the typical time frame of karbanos, now we move on to the karban shlamim, which, as we saw in the pasuk, is granted an extended time frame for eating. And a shlamim may be eaten for 2 days and a night, the day of the karban, the following night, and the second day as well. By the second night, it is nosar. So Rav Hirsch explains why this that either why is it 2 days and a night? Either be a day or 2 days. What's this day and a half? So Rav Hirsch explains, we know that in the Mikdash, a day was considered the daytime followed by the nighttime. Halayla holech achar hayom. with regards to the Mikdash. For example, like we discussed earlier, with Trumas HaDeshen, the conclusion of the previous day's avoda happened in the morning. The korbanos were burned in the day. They remained on the fire throughout the night, and the next morning they cleared it off. Or as we saw earlier with regards to the time frame for eating most korbanos, it's a day and a night. The day of the korban, the following night, that's considered one day for mikdash and korban purposes. For our own purposes, outside the mikdash, as we know in our calendar, Hayom holich achar halayla, the day follows the night. It's based on Maase Bereishis, Vayi Erev, Vayi Voker Yom Echad. The evening came before the daytime in creation. So, that's why we begin our days in the evening. Now, Rav Hirsch explains that the purpose of the Shlamim that is slightly different from other karbanos, because the Shlamim are eaten by the owners. They take it back home. The Shlamim can be eaten, unlike other karbanos, which have to be eaten in the Mikdash. The Shlamim may be eaten throughout the city of Yerushalayim. They're taken home to one's family, and one eats them together. And the idea is that when a person brings the Shlamim and feels close to Hashem, he's meant to bring that closeness back home from the Mikdash, and not just feel that closeness to Hashem in his home, the place dedicated to his avoda, but the owner is meant to take that back to his own home, to his family, and transform his family, his house, into a Mikdash Ma'at as well. This idea is symbolized in the time frame given to eat the Karban Shlamim. The Karban Shlamim's time frame is a conglomerate of a Mikdash day and a home day. The Mikdash day is the day and night, and the home day is the night and day. And so when we combine them together, we see that we get the permitted time frame for eating the Karban Shlamim of a day, a night, and a day, such that it encompasses both a Mikdash day and what Rav Hirsch calls a civil day. This even the time frame for eating the Shlamim symbolizes its different purpose. The point is to bring it home, to have its impression made upon a day as measured in the sphere of his own house, not just a day as measured in the Mikdash. And this is different, though, in the case of a Karban Todah, Rav Hirsch says. Even though a Todah is a subset of Shlamim, however, with regards to the Todah is brought by someone who was rescued by Hashem, felt Hashem's hand in his life, as he was saved from a difficult situation. And the purpose of the Todah is for the person to recognize that he was rescued by Hashem, and to rededicate his health and vitality and strength that was granted to him anew by Hashem, rededicate that to Hashem's service. And so here, it's especially important to connect the achiva to the shechita, Rav Hirsch says, because this concept of giving something up to regain it is of extreme importance. That's really most relevant in the context of the Karban Todah of all Karbanos. And so even though Todah is part of Shlamim and is eaten by the family and eaten in Yerushalayim, nevertheless, the Todah is given the condensed one-day period for eating to ensure that, specifically in the case of the Karban Todah, the Achila and the Shechita are connected to one another. Now, the last part of these psukim refer to the Isser of Pigul. And now, with this whole discussion, we can understand what the big issue is with having an intent to eat the Karban beyond the permitted time frame. Because if such an intent is had by, if the Kohen, while doing the Avodah, intends to disconnect the Achila from the Shechita or the other avodas that he is doing at that moment, if that's the case, he he's undermining the whole concept of the carbon. And the carbon itself is possible. From the very outset, he is disconnecting the two. And that intent will ruin the whole carbon, because the antithesis of the idea of the carbon, the whole concept of carbonos and the Avodah and the Mikdash is contradicted by his intent while doing the Shechita. And that results in Pigul. And Hirsch, even while saying that the derivation of the word Pigul is uncertain, he says perhaps it comes from the same Shoresh as Peleg, Pei Lamed Gimel, and it becomes Pei Gimel Lamed. And Peleg means division, to divide in half. And so here what the Kohen is doing is dividing and splitting the Achila from the Shechita, and that's how such a forbidden intent gets the name Pigul. Now there's two parts of the Pigul prohibition. One is called Chutz L'Zmano, the intent to eat something outside of the permitted time. And one is called Chutz L'Mkomo, the intent to eat it outside the permitted place. For example, having in mind to eat a karbon that's, let's say, a chatas, outside the Mikdash in Yerushalayim, or the intent to eat a shlamim outside Yerushalayim. So that's called Chutz L'Mkomo. Now, Chutz L'Mkomo, to eat it outside to eat it in an incorrect location, that does not carry a penalty of kares for one who eats it, but the karbon is pasul. Chutz L'Zmano, to eat in the wrong time, carries a penalty of kares for one who eats it, in addition to being pasul. Rav Hirsch explains the difference. He says that one who has an intent to eat the karbon in the wrong place, outside the mikdash, so he retains the connection between the shechita and the achila, but he turns his back on the mikdash, and he turns his back on Hashem's house. So he just rejects the mikdash entirely. But that's not as bad as bringing the heresy into the house of Hashem itself. And to have the machshava, the intent, to eat it in the mikdash, in the right place, but at the wrong time, and undermine the whole concept of karbon by disconnecting the achila and the shechita, that's worse. And Rav Hirsch says I'll read you what Rav Hirsch writes here. He says, he compares it. He says, similarly, he who leaves Judaism and turns his back on the sanctuary does not bring ruin upon the holy things of Israel. But the sanctuary is threatened when apostasy is introduced into its midst, when arbitrariness is sanctioned within the sanctuary itself. People stand within the sanctuary, as it were, even though they have already turned it into the very opposite, and the sanctuary itself is asked to sanction the undermining of its moral foundations. Such is Pigul. That is why it is Pigul. So then Rav Hirsch goes on and explains that Pigul is only applicable if what's called Karev HaMatir K'mitzvaso, if the karbon is completed appropriately. For example, if the Kohen has a Pigul intent during Shechita, and then proceeds to collect the blood and put the blood in the Mizbeach as appropriate, that karbon would carry an Isur Kares, because such a karbon was completed normally, was completed in accordance with Halacha. And so it seems as if that a normal karbon could be brought with the intent to disconnect the Achila from the Shechita, and that would be wrong. However, if, let's say, the Kohen shechts the karbon with that pigul intent, and then leaves the karbon because it's invalid and doesn't continue with the avodah and does not put the blood in the mizbeach, so then there's no iser pigul on the meat of that karbon, because that karbon was not completed, so that it wouldn't indicate the sanctioning of that invalid intent and the wrongful separation of Achila from Shechita. So just to recap briefly, we understand now how the basic concept of Karbon, of Shechita and Achila, and how the two work together to negate the person's physical drives and then reincorporate them into his life on a higher plane devoted to the service of Hashem. Why, and therefore we see why those two need to go together, because expressing one without the other, the positive without the negative, or the negative without the positive, would lead to an incorrect impression about the role of a person's physical aspects of his life in the service of Hashem. And that's why the Karbanos are given a compressed time frame of just one day to eat them, because we want to make sure the achila is done with in light of the impressions made by the zvicha, and that the zvicha is done with the intent, with the achila in mind, in short order. Shlomim are granted an extension to incorporate a day in the mikdash, but also a day back at home, because the idea of the karban is to incorporate its message and to transform one's own home and family into a mikdash ma'at. That does not apply to a todah, where the person is rededicating himself to Hashem and gratitude to Hashem for sparing him and really granting him his life anew. And so there, the message of the connection between the zvicha and the achila is of extreme importance. We understand why nosor is so severe, because to eat meat that is remains beyond the time frame undermines the concept of the karban by separating the achila and zvicha. And so the nosor has to be burned and destroyed. And if one eats it, it comes with a penalty of kares. And we understand why pigul is wrong, because we understand that intent in the during the avoda itself to separate the achila and the zvicha would undermine the karban from the very start. And that's why this is asur, and that's why eating the meat of that karban would also come with a penalty of karis. One last thought on the parsha from later on, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Beis. And here we read of the matanos that given to Aaron and the Kohanim, the gifts from each carbon shlomim that belonged to the Kohen. Actually, read in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, for example, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. V'ktir ha-Kohen es ha-chelach ha-mizbech. The Kohen burns the fats on the mizbech. V'hoya hechazeh le'aharon levanav. The breast goes to Aaron and his children. V'es shok ha-yomin, the right thigh, titnu suruma la-Kohen, is uplifted, given as a gift to the Kohen. Mizivchei shamechem, from your carbon shlomim. So Rav Hirsch seeks to investigate why the chaz of a shok, the breast and the thigh, were given to the Kohen from every single karban shlomim. So Rav Hirsch explains this by understanding the symbolism of these two body parts. The chaz of the breast, the chest, is where the heart is, the symbolic of man's thoughts and aspirations. These, Rav Hirsch explains, must be dedicated to the Torah, which is embodied by the Kohen. The Kohen are meant to be teachers of Torah primarily. They also worked in the Mikdash, but that was a side job. When they weren't in the Mikdash, they were teaching Torah to the Jewish people, traveling teachers. Right? We know that then Vezos HaBracha, Moshe gave the bracha to Shevet Levi, Yoru Mishpotecha Liyakov Vesorascha Liyisrael. This is that they were teachers of Torah to all the Jewish people. And so, when bringing Karban Shlamim, expressing his feeling of closeness to Hashem, the owner takes the breast, gives it to the Kohen to symbolize to himself that he must be dedicating his thoughts and aspirations to the Torah. The Torah must be the guide, and he must channel all his goals in life through the Torah. And that's why he gives the chazah to the Kohen. The shok, the thigh, symbolizes strength and progress and striding forward, and success, and material success. And even though this is something that is not where the Kohen excels, because we know the Kohen is the teacher and the one who does the avodah in the Mikdash, but nevertheless, there is two important lessons to be gained by giving the shok to the Kohen. One is that it's a recognition of the fact that the material prosperity comes from observance of the Torah, which is, of course, taught by the Kohen. And so by giving the shok to the Kohen, the owner symbolizes that even this material prosperity is owed to the Torah that's embodied by the Kohen. But the second symbol of giving the shok to the Kohen is a reminder that material prosperity also must be devoted to the goals of the Torah. Not just that it comes from the Torah, but it also has to be given back to the Torah. And so we give the shok to the Kohen because we are devoting our material prosperity that Hashem has blessed us with and using it for spiritual purposes, to use in, to advance the goals of the Torah. That's why it's called a truma, as is the gift of grain given to the Kohen. Truma means to be uplifted. And when we have material blessing, we uplift it by subordinating it to the goals of the Torah and using it for spiritual purposes, thereby uplifting even our material possessions. And that aspect of our lives can become spiritual as well when used in the service of those goals. And these are the intentions that the person bringing the shlamim should have when gifting the shok and the chaza to the Kohen. From the Kohen's perspective, Rav Hirsch writes, he is to view the chaza that's given to him as a reminder that he is to work on the breast of the people, their thoughts and aspirations. That's to be the area of life which he is to cultivate among the Jewish people and teach them Torah and be in a positive influence and illuminate their lives through the teachings that he shares. And when he receives the shok, he is also reminded of the fact that even though he doesn't make a direct contribution, an economic contribution to the Jewish nation, he does not contribute financially because he doesn't own property and doesn't work the land and doesn't have very much materially, nevertheless, the prosperity of every single individual who does succeed materially is owed to him and his teaching of the Torah, which he has spread to those people. And also is to remember that he's also reminded that he should help those people direct their material blessings to a higher purpose so that they give meaning to the blessings that they have. And we see now from this how the chaza of a shok have a symbolic meaning to the one giving the gift, and they also have a symbolic meaning to the kohen who is the recipient. And this reinforces the important role that Torah plays in Jewish society, so that everybody who brings a shlamim in the mikdash is reminded that Torah is the most important value in our lives, and that we must recognize it as such, both in the spiritual side of our lives, as well as in the physical aspect of our lives too.